You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Might have started under Trump, but when you're the president, you own the situation. Whether it's a success or not a success, it's going to own it. I think in February, we're going to get about 100,000. And again, I don't care what we call it, but I can tell you this. Those numbers of people that are being released, they're purposely withholding that information. They've been told not to withhold that information. I now know that they're bringing people from McAllen over to Laredo, processing them in Laredo, and they're going to release them in my community.
March the 9th, 2021, those are the words of Congressman Henry Cuellar, Texas Democrat, says we're not getting the truth about the illegals coming in. We know that. We know they've been told at the highest levels, don't give a lot of numbers out, just kind of be silent, just kind of move them around. Bring them in here, let them in here, put them over there, move them. I mean, no one can get a whole handle on them, even if they tried, probably. This is what's going on right now. This is one of the crises facing our nation right this moment. Now, you live far from the border, you just don't see it. You don't think, but I'm telling you, this is a tsunami wave of illegals, and the way the Biden administration is handling or not handling it is going to make it a bigger crisis. In fact, finally, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas has said, we have an overwhelming number of migrants. Really? So you know what he's doing? Oh, this is typical. His statement in an email to staff. Today, I activated the volunteer force to support Customs and Border Protection as they face a surge in migration along the southwest border. There you have it. He points out that in 2019, about 900 volunteers deployed to support the Customs and Border Patrol during that similar migration surge. So he's asking members to step forward and volunteer to provide humanitarian support. Why don't you just say, close the borders, nobody comes in anymore. Put a stop to it. Well, that would be contrary to what Biden has promised them. Congressman Cuellar of Texas said, we at the border are seeing it on a constant basis. The numbers are being hidden. And, of course, the terms are changing. They used to be called detention camps under the Trump administration. So if we rename them, if we call them reception centers, reception center, come on in, we're receiving you. Nice. And yet they're still putting, quote, kids in cages, as they claim Trump did, as Obama did. And they are separating kids from adults till they verify if that's really a relative and the children aren't being smuggled across. And Biden sent his team down the other day, supposedly, to take a closer look and investigate. I don't know if they reported to Biden. Maybe they reported to Mayorkas. That's why he suddenly recognized, oh, there's an issue down there. No report to the American people. In the meantime, we have another crisis, a COVID relief package being shoved down our throats. They're not going to vote on it today. They decide, let's take another day. That's not going to stop it. Not going to stop it. And also, South Carolina, Tim Scott, a black man. MSNBC Joy Reid says that Senator Tim Scott is a token. Why? Because he's a black Republican. You want to hear Trey Gowdy come to the defense of the South Carolina senator. And also today we're going to be joined by Tommy Waller. He's with the Center for Security Policy and the electric grid that we could face the attack that could be coming at some point. Might have happened already in Mumbai, India last month, that China might have purposely, intentionally, maliciously cut power to more than 20 million, more than 20 million Indians in that country. We're going to take a closer look at that. And President Biden, He cannot remember the name of his Secretary of Defense. We all have brain freeze from time to time, but this is getting not just old, not humorous, but scary. Kamala's in the wings. Don't worry. She's standing in the wings waiting. So we got all this to cover and a lot more. I mean a lot more to cover. I'm just trying to give you a fast glimpse of what's coming. So let your friends and neighbors know that we're on the air. I will tell you this. If you were expecting more on the Oprah interview with Meghan Markle and Prince Charles, I got the news for you. This is an Oprah-free Meghan Markle Prince Charles program. Not going to do it. I made one mention yesterday, and that was one mention too many. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Most of us are taking precautions to avoid COVID in public, but what are you doing to make sure your home is free of COVID? Wellington Environmental is the answer. And here's the great news. Wellington's average cost to professionally treat a home, less than $300. Less than $300. And the cost for treating most offices, not much higher. Be ready to copy a phone number to get on the schedule as soon as possible. First, let me remind you, if you want your own professional fogging device, Wellington sells them, price $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors, save $100. If you want your home or office professionally disinfected by Wellington, here's the number, 314-644-4930. Again, get on the schedule early, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington, Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing. Covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beale Roofing. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Less than a dime of every dollar goes to the coronavirus. Just take a look at the payoff to some of their constituencies. $350 billion for states that are poorly run and that have long-standing problems, but didn't even lose money because of the coronavirus. Places like California and New York. $130 billion for schools, but only a nickel of that money, of each dollar of that money, is going to be spent this year. Most of it is for future years. Again, paying off teachers' unions.
Now, again, we wanted to reemphasize to you, and those are the words of Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, this COVID relief package, which you're supposed to believe is just going to solve everything and take care of everything. Well, actually, for the Dems, it will. At least it'll help. Because they're using this as a scam to fund all of their Democrat left-wing ideas and to bail out states like New York and California that have totally messed up everything else in their economy. And they're not suffering that directly from COVID, but they're going to claim they are so they can get the money. And teachers' unions, as you heard Senator Cotton say, they're just bowing down to them because they're still trying to say schools can't open, shouldn't open. Well, here's where we are at this point. The House initially had expected to vote today, to send that legislation to Biden for his signatures. He's obviously said, I will sign it. Get in front of me. What am I signing here? What is this? Where do I sign? The House just received the bill processing papers from the Senate yesterday morning, so that's apparently going to delay it. So later today, the House will take a procedural vote on the legislation. And then tomorrow morning, according to Majority Leader Steny Hoyer's office, then we will pass it. This package, again, remember, includes a third round of stimulus checks. an extension of the weekly $300 unemployment insurance boost, billions in funding for vaccine distribution, COVID-19 testing efforts, and that's the stuff they want to keep putting in front of you. See what we're doing? See what we're doing? But less than 10%, probably closer to 9% of the 1.9 trillion. You know, I'm tired of saying 1.9 trillion. Let's just say 2 trillion. At that point, what's the difference of 0.1, right? 2 trillion COVID relief package, 9% of it, maybe 9%, certainly less than 10%, actually has anything to do with COVID relief. There is money built in for so many different packages and plums that the Democrats revere, arts and humanities, things of that nature. Is that going to help? Is that going to help get at all the COVID relief package and immunizations and so forth? No, it's not going to. But they got it. They got it. They are planning to move forward with it. Now, I do want to point out something. The Democrats are trying to quickly enact this into law before the current unemployment insurance benefits expire March 14. We are March 9. Well, if they do pass it tomorrow, they'll make the deadline with plenty of time. They got what they wanted. It's not a bipartisan bill whatsoever. They are simply saying, this is it, and we're going to go forward with it. We're not going to care about what the Republicans are saying and thinking. And that's because they think we got a mandate the last election. We got a mandate. You didn't get any mandate. There was no mandate. And, of course, we still have questions about the election, don't we? Oh, I can't say that. That's right. They remind us that if you dare question this election, if you dare raise a question and say that, you know, maybe this election wasn't exactly free of fraud or there might have been some issues. I'm not saying it's enough to overturn, but how really legitimate was it? Then you must be a conspiracy theorist. You're not accepting the will of the people. Riddle me this. When did Hillary Clinton ever say that Donald Trump legitimately won his election? When did she ever say that he could win only if the Russians were involved? Well, we know many times on that. And overall, a second riddle. When had the Democrats in mass ever said Trump was the legitimate president? Nope. They fought it from the night the returns came in. And they claim they think at this point, a mandate. Well, yes, they do have, at this point, the White House, Senate, because the vice president gets cast a deciding vote, and they also have the House and the Congress. But they have to be fearing what's going to happen in 2022. Because a lot of these folks voting for this right now that are Democrats, they got to go back and explain to their constituents why they did what they did for 2022. I was talking to a good friend last night. We're talking about that very issue. There could certainly be, and I hope there is, a voter revolt in 2022. And I believe a lot of the Democrats have had to sign on to this COVID thing because they do not dare step out of line. That they will have to face the consequences among their constituents. That's a good thing on one point about why the House of Congress has to be every 2 years, let's do it again. Senators get their 6 years. But at this point, there's no stopping this COVID relief package. $2 trillion package. And again, Senator Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, says when you look at what's going on here, there really is not a base idea and a base plan to help Americans in general. It is for special interests.
The worst of all, they're going to give a lot of Americans a $1,400 check. Federal employees are going to get that same check. They are also going to get $1,400 a week, every single week, if their kids aren't in school. So if you're working in the middle of the country, hard to make a living, you get one $1,400 payment once. If you're a federal bureaucrat in Washington, where your schools are still closed, you get it every single week. Talk about the swamp looking after itself.
Well, yeah, I'd maybe be a federal employee. If you didn't sign on as a federal employee, you missed the boat, folks. Now, in the midst of all of this, while they are trying to get this push forward, I'm looking at a piece written by The Hill. And I like the way it quickly gets to the point. Here's the way it reads. Democrats are facing looming challenges as they plot their next legislative step. Well, you'd think they'd be all fun and happy and games and parades and balloons. Nope. Democrats are facing looming challenges as they plot their next legislative step, threatening to cut short a victory lap over the coronavirus relief bill. Well, what could be the problem? I mean, they got this $2 trillion package pushed through. And Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat in New York, will spend the next 2 years trying to make good on big promises with the slimmest of majorities. They'd win a 50-50 Senate with the Kamala Harris casting deciding vote, of course. And the Democrats realize they do not have a mandate. Otherwise, it would not be that close, because that certainly underscores that narrowly divided Senate. Any one Democrat can have a major influence. And Republicans who unified against the relief bill still needed to pass most bills for now. In fact, Senator Chris Coons of Delaware quoted in this Hill article, in a 50-50 Senate, if any one member changes their mind on an amendment or vote or issue, it can change the outcome. That's right. And the article goes ahead and points out that was that point driven home Friday during nearly a 12-hour pause. A 12-hour delay. Everybody just put on pause. Wait 12 hours. That put an uncomfortable spotlight on the Democrats as they were scrambling behind the scenes, behind the curtain, as Senator Chuck Schumer, Majority Leader, trying to make sure that Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, stayed on board and didn't make any changes. And the balancing act for him was to keep Manchin on board and not lose progressives like Senator Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Now, Sanders is an independent, but he votes with the Democrat caucus. And Senator Coons said, it is important that Schumer be able to hold us together as a caucus, even with, you know, all the all-night, many votes, that sort of thing. Manchin has been pushing for, I want bipartisan support. I want this to reflect all of America. Well, it got through without all of America being supported in it. And now they're trying to see what happens next. No, there's still a lot of work ahead for the Democrats and for Republicans. And I really hope that all this comes to roost, as they say, the chickens coming home to roost in 2022. And when that happens, and Democrats lose control of the House and possibly the Senate, in fact, I certainly hope that will happen as well, then we'll see things begin to turn around for 2024 for sure. And then we'll be facing President Kamala Harris. That's right, I said Harris. Biden's not going to be there much longer. If Biden makes it through a year, I've always said I'd be surprised. Right now, I'm not sure he's going to make it that deep. Here's something else that you need to know what the Democrats are trying to do today without any debate. U.S. Congressman Thompson, Democrat of California, introducing H.R. 8, the Bipartisan Background Checks Act of 2021. It would criminalize a private transfer of firearms between law-abiding citizens, law-abiding gun owners. If you have a gun, and I like it, I like to buy it from you, I could just buy it. No, in this case, we're going to have to send it. You have to send my name and all my information to the feds, and I have to be checked as if I'm buying it from a store. In fact, you can't even just give it to your son or your daughter. You have to verify that they meet certain gun control guidelines. And they're trying to rush this through while we're all looking over here. Look at the COVID shiny thing, And maybe, okay, look at the border too, but don't look back at what we're doing on the gun control issue. And the Moms Demand Actions reports, the group says, this is a huge moment for our movement. There's never been a better time for federal action. And you know why, of course? Because, one, they have the Speaker of the House, Pelosi, the Senate Majority Leader Schumer, and President Joe Biden. All three gun control groups think this is the right time to do it. They're all financed by anti-gun billionaire Michael Bloomberg. He spent more than $1 billion for gun control in the 2020 election. And right now they are rushing forward. They are going to run this through. And they pass all the stories around, the lies about that exist about gun safety, gun qualifications, gun checks. The bottom line is, if you have a gun legally, you do know, I assume, that if you shoot to kill somebody, that you probably broke the law unless you're using it in self-defense of yourself or someone else. I don't think the criminals understand that. I don't know what the Democrats are going to do about that. They're going to have to go around to tell them, hey, guys, we need to take all your guns back because we have a new check system and you can't pass them around in your gangs anymore and you can't file the serial numbers and all. You think they'll go for that? Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. All right, let's take a break and we come back. Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, in a very nasty and possibly scary moment. That's coming up.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I just want to thank you both, and I want to thank the former general. I keep calling him general, but the guy who runs that outfit over there. I want to make sure we thank the secretary for all he's done to try to implement what we've just talked about.
That was President Joe Biden yesterday. I'm going to thank the foreign, I'm going to let you hear it again in just a moment. But then he says the guy who runs that outfit over there, that outfit he's talking about is kind of the Pentagon. He's trying to remember the name of his Secretary of Defense. Now, we all have times where we kind of have a little brain freeze. I'm not going to deny that. But don't you think at this point in something like this that you just don't forget the name of the Secretary of Defense? He is a first, not that that should help me, but maybe it would, the first black Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. And Biden cannot remember his name. In fact, he can't even remember his job when you get down to it. He's the Pentagon chief. But as Biden says, the guy that runs that outfit over there, listen to this again. He is totally lost.
I just want to thank you both, and I want to thank the former general. I keep calling him general, but the guy who runs that outfit over there. I want to make sure we thank the secretary for all he's done to try to implement what we've just talked about.
Does that scare you to some extent? Well, look at it this way. If Trump had bobbled around that much, and I don't mean just this, this is just the latest incident. Do you think there would have been an outcry from the left? He's gone too far. We need to remove him. And I have no doubt that some Democrats are also saying that behind the scenes. I mean, it's, again, not just the latest. Back in December, when Biden announced his pick to lead the Health and Human Services, Javier Becerra, he introduced him as, I nominate Javier Becerra. He was reading from the teleprompter. And a moment later, he did correctly pronounce his name. Biden, at 78, is the oldest to assume the presidency. That shouldn't be an issue unless maybe it is. Last month in Houston, President Biden was trying to thank Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. He referred to her as Shirley Jackson Lee. And in 2020, actually, back in October, he mispronounced the name of his running mate. She says her name is pronounced Kamala. Biden pronounced it Kamala. I probably pronounce it here and there. I don't really care at this point. But Biden had, of course, been questioned at one time, remember, by a reporter. Should you think you need to take a cognitive test, pardon me, to prove that you're not in cognitive decline? No, man, why do I have to take a test? Why the hell would I have to take a test? And then he referred to the black reporter and saying, did you take a cocaine test before you had to interview me? That didn't go over very well either. If Biden has this issue, I feel for him. But I doubt that we can continue down this road. And I'm sure the Democrats are having the same question. And in fact, in the video yesterday, in fact, in every video where you do see Biden, well, now I guess I'm going to get this thing in my throat again. I think they're plotting against me. Anyway, that they are going to, every time you see him, you see Kamala off to the right. Back in the background, just hovering on his shoulder almost. And when he was blowing the name yesterday, you could almost see her shake her head slightly. Oh, no, here we go again. As I told you, she's probably already signed off on the 25th Amendment because it'd require her signature if he won't leave when they say you got to leave. And by the way, again, when he left the podium, he forgot his mask, as he did the other day. He goes over to talk to her, and she begins to back up a few steps. Social distancing, you know. Then he turns to a staffer and gets close to them. They start backing up. And then he leaves without putting his mask on, which tells me on a normal course, this man is not wearing the mask. While you are under orders and instruction, you should be wearing the mask all the time. Right. What happens if our nation's power grid is suddenly locked down by China? China. I've got an expert for the Center for Security Policy. He wants to correlate that threat possibility with what happened in India last month. Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, last month in Texas, the grid, the electric grid system, pretty much froze up. And some 4 million plus residents of Texas and bordering states, even parts of Mexico, were without power during that freezing and life-threatening temperatures, as a matter of fact. And when I say 4 million, we're talking about that's just the utility box. We don't know how many, when that box is on the side of a house or an apartment, we don't know how many live in there. So it had to be actually 4 million above that number. But that could have been a precursor of what we would have to deal with if we had someone interrupt our grid supply for the nation. Now, Dateline, Mumbai, India. October 2020, India's second most populous city, Mumbai, had a power outage that shut down the National Stock Exchange, halted rail transport, leaving more than 20 million without power. And again, I'd say that 20 million just refers to utility boxes. And there's suspicion that China was behind it. My guest is Tommy Waller, Director of Infrastructure Security at the Center for Security, 20 years in the Marines. Semper Fi, welcome aboard, Tommy.
Hey, Semper Fi. Sorry, thanks for having me on.
You bet. Now, I want to get, I know you also testified in front of Congress recently, referenced Texas, but let me deal first of all with the situation and the possibility that China is behind what happened in India. Go ahead, sir.
Sure. Yeah, well, Larry, last what we saw was late last month, a United States-based cybersecurity firm called Recorded Future published a report. It was titled China-Linked Group Red Echo Targets the Indian Power Sector Amid Heightened Border Tensions. Now, this report, it didn't substantiate any claims. It didn't have forensic evidence that China had hacked the Indian grid. But, you know, 4 months after those clashes at the border, and this is the first time in 45 years where combat fatalities were experienced in this, between these two massive countries. 4 months later, you know, like you said, Mumbai went dark. And the reality is, as Recorded Future pointed out, that there were numerous, you know, very important dispatch centers in India infected by Chinese malware that operate India's grid. So there's probably a connection. The New York Times certainly thinks that there is. We worry that there is. And, of course, as usual, you may never know because of the lack of forensic evidence when it comes to cyber warfare.
But at the same time, you can't just say, well, it might have been just a coinky dinky, especially as director of infrastructure security for the Center for Security Policy, that had to raise flags. And then how do you apply and fear reference the U.S.?
It should be a real wake-up call for the United States. I mean, look, what we've seen now, Larry, is we've seen Russia and China do exactly the same thing to the countries that surround them. You know, you saw Russia testing its cyber warfare tools in the Ukraine, using the Ukraine as a place for their training, for their cadre to refine tactics, techniques, and procedures, TTPs, as you know, as a Marine. And so what have the Chinese just done? We think the same thing in India. Whether we have smoking gun evidence or not, if they inserted the malware, if they intruded into these different regional load dispatch centers the way that the cybersecurity firm found, that is enough evidence to know that where there's smoke, there's most likely fire.
Many might believe, oh, we're immune from that. We are good. They can't do that. That's a false premise.
It is. Yeah, unfortunately, it is. In fact, the same Russian malware that took down the Ukrainian grid, we know has been in the United States grid for just about 6 years at this point. And do you know, Larry, at this moment in time, the grid regulators, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, they don't have any provision that requires grid operators to detect, mitigate, or remove implanted malware in the grid.
Would you say that again and explain why? Go ahead.
Reason why, there's no regulations at the federal level for the bulk power system to detect, mitigate, or remove malware. We, our Secure the Grid Coalition with the Center for Security Policy sponsors, we have for years petitioned the federal government to reverse that. And you know, you ask why. The industry, the electric power industry, one of the strongest lobbies in the world, they put forth plenty of their own comments to this regulator saying that that would be, in their words, unduly burdensome. That's right. Unduly burdensome to mitigate that malware. So,
That's scary. That's scary. And in fact, I know you wrote an article, and in your article, again, you're listening to Tommy Waller. He's the Director of Infrastructure Security for the Center for Security Policy. And you quote in that article Mike Watt Rogers, a former chair of the House Intel Committee, and his statement, as you quoted, if a full-on turn-the-lights-off cyber war were to happen today, we would lose. Think about that. We would lose a cyber war. A few clicks of the mouse, just a few seconds, hackers in Beijing or Moscow could turn off all of our electricity.
That's right. And that's not me saying that, Larry. As you said, that's the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. And what I would tell you is that the internationally renowned cybersecurity experts that are part of our Secure the Grid Coalition, they concur with that assessment. And part of it, too, is not just the IT aspect, the network. We're talking about malware just now. Think about this, Larry. Right now, there's 300-plus transformers in our grid that were manufactured in China, at least 200 of which are large power, critical, hard-to-replace transformers. And one of those, they found extra hardware, back doors on it.
I wondered about that because I know we had a lot. We've got a lot of that equipment. And you say how many from China that are spread across our nation?
There's 300 plus total, 200 of which are the critical, hard to replace. We're talking 12, 18 months lead time to replace just one. And you know what happened last year, Larry, is there one of these transformers was seized at the Port of Houston and transported to Sandia National Laboratories under federal escort because the federal government was so worried about the extra hardware that could be in these transformers to allow the Chinese to potentially take them down remotely. And that's exactly why President Trump signed an executive order last year to protect the bulk power system. And unfortunately, President Biden, on his first day in office, suspended that executive order for 90 days, opening up the floodgates.
It makes no sense other than bowing down to the lobby, the power union lobbies, right?
Well, for sure, the power lobbies, China certainly has an interest in selling transformers.
Right.
You know, our Secure the Grid Coalition is doing everything we can right now to encourage Secretary Jennifer Granholm, the newly appointed Secretary of Energy, to not only reinstate the executive order signed by President Trump, but to actually strengthen it and better enforce it. But it's going to be up to her and up to the executive branch to decide what to do. So far, they left us vulnerable.
I was looking at you doing some testifying before Congress about this issue. And do you think some are getting it, or is it just a partisan understanding? I mean, this should be an American understanding and an American fear.
You're absolutely right, Larry. This has got to be one of the most bipartisan topics there is. And I'm telling you, we are actually blessed that, in fact, it is. Our Secure the Grid Coalition is comprised of people from all sorts of political stripes who I'm sure voted all sorts of different ways in this last election, and they're all working together. I just got off the phone with Texas Senator, State Senator Bob Hall, who is the champion of grid security in Texas, and he just told me 10 minutes ago, Larry, he has legislation he's filing today that could make a huge difference in Texas, and for the first time ever, he has Democrat lawmakers lined up to help him co-sponsor. We've never seen that before. And I think, and I'm not just saying that in a partisan fashion, I'm saying there just haven't been that many lawmakers who are that awake. And I think that the very unfortunate catastrophe that just took place in Texas may have been the type of wake-up call that the people of Texas needed to be mobilized.
There could be a silver lining to that cloud. But if he's talking about what they're doing in Texas and that legislation is for Texas and their utility company, I take it, right? But what can be applied nationally, or what should be applied nationally based on what he's trying to do? And where is that legislation? He just introduced it, right?
Yes, sir. He's filing it today, and the legislative session goes through the end of May. And so this is a saga, Larry. We fought this. Like you said, you watched the video of my testimony there in Austin. We fought this for 6 years, three legislative sessions. We've been magnificently defeated by the electric utility lobby every time. We hope that this time it'll be different, that they'll be willing to do the right thing. And as you mentioned, if Texas can crack the code on this for their own grid, there's no reason why the rest of the country can't follow. And that's what we hope and pray we can do.
Yeah, I think it's got to be critical. Again, like you say, with this blackout in Texas, it was frightening, but also should be, I hope, a wake-up call for us. Tommy, I want to thank you for your time. We'll probably be contacting you in the near future as we move forward.
Absolutely. Well, Larry, let me just ask for your listeners, there's actually something they can do to get in this fight. If they go to securethegrid.com and click on the little take action button, for the next 30 days, the public can actually petition FERC to change their rules to protect the grid.
All right. Securethegrid.com.
Take action. Yes, sir.
SecureTheGrid.com. Thank you very much, Tommy. Appreciate your time. SecureTheGrid.com. That's Tommy Waller with the Center for Security Policy. Now, we've got another Waller coming up. No relation. J. Michael Waller. I want you to hear what he said. He's also with the Center for Security. Reference a January 6th riot and how the FBI accepts what he said, but Democrats won't. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You
you don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Well, we had more than 26,000 National Guard troops put in place for the inauguration of President Joe Biden January 20. We still have 5,000 National Guard members deployed to the Capitol, fences up and so forth. This deployment from January 6 to March 12, January 6, of course, the date of the Capitol Hill riot, just to this date is costing something like $480 million in American taxpayer funds. And U.S. Capitol Police say we want the National Guard to stay around another 2 months. There is a member of the Center for Security Policy. He's a senior analyst, reference strategy, J. Michael Waller. He issued a report on January 13 at the Center for Security Policy site. The Federalist printed it again, reprinted it the next day. Now, in this article, Waller said he observed four separate groups on the Senate side of the Capitol lawn during the march and protest that was taking place on January 6. He said one, plainclothes militias. He said militant aggressive men in Donald Trump and MAGA gear at a front police line at the base of the temporary presidential inaugural platform. Two, agents, provocateurs, scattered groups of men, exhorting marchers to gather closely and tightly toward the center of the Capitol, the outside of the Capitol, and then prevent them from leaving. Three, fake Trump protesters, few young men wearing Trump or MAGA hats backwards who did not fit in with the rest of them. And four, disciplined and uniformed column of attackers, wearing similar but not identical camouflage uniforms, black gear, some with helmets, so forth. Now, he says he saw all of that. And you know what happened with the Democrats? Well, they questioned him. They didn't like the story. In fact, Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota, denounced that statement as disinformation, conspiracy theory. CNN's people were stating it was basically a ridiculous conspiracy theory. Senator Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said that statement is mindless garbage. And the New York Times got involved as it grilled Senator Ron Johnson about why he relied on that report. Johnson, a Wisconsin Republican who chaired the Senate Homeland Security Committee until earlier this year, said, because I believe in it. The guy knows what he's talking about. And just because it doesn't fit your narrative doesn't mean you want to hear it and know it. And then you want some additional support for it. The FBI assistant director in a Senate investigative panel said the FBI findings, and I'm quoting, definitively, I should say definitely, and absolutely support what J. Michael Waller said he found. The FBI assistant director made her statement March 3rd in front of a Senate committee. The FBI backed it up. They said it definitely happened, as her exact statement said. We definitely so far seen a mixture of exactly what he described. We're seeing people who got caught up in the moment, got caught up in some sort of energy, made their way into the Capitol. Probably the ones you see the charges simply a trespassing. And then we definitely see that portion that he's pointing out, small groups and cells now charged with conspiracy. They coalesced either on site or even days or weeks prior. And sort of an intent that day, and they too probably caught people up in the energy. But the CNN, New York Times, Washington Post all say that's all false. And it's not enough that it's stated by Waller. Then you had Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, signing that into the record, citing the Waller report. And they say it's baseless, false. Why are you putting that in there? Well, to his credit, Senator Johnson is not going to put up with that kind of nonsense either. He challenged them back. Waller, in one part, as I said, he stated, I presumed these fake Trump supporters were Antifa or something similar. That entire afternoon, I saw none of them act aggressively or cause any problems, at least not from my vantage point. So he wasn't embellishing beyond what he saw. But it's not enough because you are not following the narrative. And the response again of Senator Ron Johnson to all those who were blaming him and saying, why are you quoting this guy? You're quoting a Looney Tunes. He's with the Center for Security Policy, extensive background credentials, And the senator said, I'm not afraid of information. I'm amazed at how many people are and how quick people are to put the conspiracy theory label on something and call it disinformation. And you know why they do it, because it doesn't fit the narrative. Oh, you should know this. The task force appointed by Speaker Nancy Pelosi has some recommendations. They want a QRF. What is QRF? That's to be a quick reaction force. This is their report that they released. We want National Guard members currently mobilized to supplement the Capitol Police. We want a quick response force or quick reaction force. They got three different terms, options that they want to do. Establish it from existing federal law enforcement. Build a QRF under command of the D.C. National Guard. Create a QRF that permanently resides within D.C. I remind you what a non-voting member of the D.C. delegation said yesterday. A Democrat said, Congress is afraid of its shadow. They are. And again, it makes for good copy for them to blame anybody that might be not thinking like they're thinking. All right, coming up in the next hour, we're going to spend a lot more time on the crisis, and I mean it is a growing crisis of illegals at the border. You're not being told the truth. They're not going to tell you the truth because they don't want you to know. And also, more than that, stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.